I'm listening to the show every morning, and you can say it's grand. It's not grand if you're not on it, though.
OTB's Mount Rushmore.
Some talent in Cork, isn't there? Wow. A few of the GAA boys weren't happy, but it was my sporting hero. I was contesting, I think, against Jimmy Barry Murphy. So once you're in that company, everything is good.
Join the debate across all our social channels at Off the Ball.
It's very, very special. Believe me, I think it becomes more special when you're on the coach, because it's something, unfortunately, inside me that's ultra competitive, and I need to be there.
Catch the live decision-making over the next few months on OTB AM on the OTB Podcast Network. The OTB Podcast Network.
OTB AM.
With Aviva, Ireland's largest insurer, celebrating 10 years of iconic sporting moments at the Aviva Stadium.
And it is time for Wicklow to step on up and get the Mount Rushmore treatment. We've had Darrow Breen with us earlier on to run the rule over some of the candidates, Katie Taylor, really, and the rest was beautiful tangents from Darrow Breen. We've got to touch on a whole heap of other sports stars this morning with Tom Malone and Paul Howard. If you're joining us for the first time on Mount Rushmore, here's how it's going to work. We have the OTB selector, which is Tom Malone. He's going to pick his four names, and then Paul Howard is going to wander on up to the mountain with his chisel and savagely take away one of the faces and put on one of his own picks. Tom and Paul, you're very welcome. Good morning to you both.
Good morning.
Good morning, Alan.
I hope you're suitably nervous, Tom, first of all.
I actually am, because when you do this at first, you're just like Asher Grant, you know. You think about it and you're kind of nearly thinking, gee, my community games medal might actually get me in here. But no, after a while, the name gets to about 25 or 30 and you ring a few people. And yeah, it's not easy. There's a couple of straightforward ones, but getting the final four definitely wasn't straightforward.
Paul, Darragh came on earlier on and said that he could basically pick a Bray Mount Rushmore and that would do the job for County Wicklow. What are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, he's probably right. I'm the same as Tom. I spent you know, the last couple of days going through all the names, and I mean there's probably 10 from Bray alone. The problem, of course, with it being Wicklow is you'll never get planning permission to build anything like this. But even in sort of my lifetime, there's certainly 10 from Bray. And so it's a difficult one. As Tom said, I agree with him. I think one or two are nailed on. I wonder if we got the same ones that are nailed on. But the rest, you know, I suppose they're the ones we're going to argue over.
Well, let's get things underway, Tom. Pick number one, I think, goes without saying, does it not?
Yeah. I think we'll just put this straight out there and not argue early, because, you know, we have to be polite early on. So, you know, Katie Taylor is just an absolute stonewall certainty. Not just as a boxer, as an ambassador, and you can't doubt, as Dara would say, her brainness as well, because that is important. She is, like, your second mention of Katie Taylor is always Bray boxer. And she, you know, that's important in this Mount Rushmore discussion as well. Provenance, like, you know, she was born in Bray. She represents the town incredibly well. She's incredibly proud of her heritage, and her sporting achievements are unparalleled, unimpeachable, you know. And she is absolutely first on the list.
I can't imagine there's going to be any disagreement there, Paul.
No disagreement at all. The brainness thing is really interesting, because like, her dad, who's English, came to Bray first to work in Bray Amusements. And if you know Bray, I know Bray very, very well. You know, my first connection with Bray, my first attachment to Bray, was going to Bray Amusements on a Saturday, you know, to play the slot machines, or to sometimes what we used to call it, an arse nudge. You used to hit the slot machines with your bottom to try to take those. We were convinced that there was something magnetic holding those coins on. You know those ones that do that?
The pushers.
Yeah, but if you gave them an arse nudge, you could actually make a few fall down. But there were alarms that would go off. And so anyway, that's a very, very Bray thing. That, you know, Katie is absolutely rooted in Bray. The Olympic medal, you know, the undisputed lightweight champion of the world, all the world titles she's won. As well as that, she at a time when they were considering whether to introduce women's boxing to the Olympics, she was essentially the reason they did. She was the sport at that time. So I think for that reason, even that reason alone, she would be going on it. But, you know, she's Ireland's, you know, one of Ireland's probably five most accomplished sports people. So I can't see her not going on it.
It's interesting that you mentioned, Paul, that there are one, potentially two bankers here, because I'm not sure if there is going to be an agreement over the second pick here. So, Tommy, you might just bring us on to what your number two pick will be.
Well, despite what the record books say, Wicklow is actually a football county, as in a GAA county. And yes, it took until 2001 before they actually saw another county in the senior championship from outside Leinster, and that was Galway. And it obviously went on to be All-Ireland champions that year. But I spoke to people from the Logan papers, and if 75% of their coverage in sport is GAA, and so you can't not put Wicklow's greatest footballer on the mound, in my opinion. There have been some greats over the years. Moses Coffey back in the day for Rathnew. In more recent times, you have the likes of Leighton Glynn. But really, Wicklow's greatest footballer is from Bolton Glasney. He's from Kevin O'Brien. He's just the most incredible man and football man and Wicklow man you could ever come across. Like, just to give you context, he started playing senior football in 1982 when he was still on the under-16s team for Bolton Glass. They were the sort of the club team of the 80s and 90s, and he was the focal point of it. He went on two tours with the Compromise Rules team. He won an All-Star. Like, he's from Wicklow, and he won an All-Star at full forward in 1990. In the GAA 125-year team, when they did county by, they did four provincial teams from 1984 to 2008, and the full forward line was Colm O'Rourke, Matty Ford, and Kevin O'Brien. He is Wicklow's greatest footballer. He is absolutely unbelievable. If Wicklow was to separate and set up a mint, they would have to go to Kevin O'Brien and get his medals from him. That's where they would start. He is just, like, when you think about, he won county titles from under-12s the whole way up to minor. Then he went to senior, with Bolton Glass, by the way. He went on to win an All-Ireland with them. Won nine county titles with them as senior. And then the latter part of his career, he stuck with the club and then won county titles all the way back down to junior C. So, like, if you were around, and then in around 2009, when he was still in his 40s, he was playing Masters football for Dublin. Kevin O'Brien is the most phenomenal footballer Wicklow has ever had. And look, the thing with GAA, it's an unfortunate accident of geography a lot of the time. I mean, if Joe Canning had been born in Bolton Glass, like, you know, what would we know about him as a hurler? But Kevin O'Brien from Bolton Glass, you know, and there's an east-west divide in Wicklow as well. That's probably a little not unheard of, but, you know, Darrow Breen been run out of Kilcool and been blamed saying, oh, you're only a garrison town. I mean, that would be a more widely held view, perhaps, than maybe Darrow gave that story credit for. So there is a massive east-west divide. And in West Wicklow, Bolton Glass were just the most incredible team. I remember in 1990, myself and Dad were trying to think, we definitely went to one of the games, and, like, for Bolton Glass to be going to Croke Park and representing West Wicklow, and it did feel like they were representing West Wicklow, it was just the most incredible thing. Another man on that team, by the way, Wicklow won a junior All-Ireland Championship in 2002. So Bolton Glass won an All-Ireland, a club All-Ireland in 1990, and 12 years later in junior championship, Kevin O'Brien and Hugh Kenny, by the way, who was a fullback at the time for the same club and would come into the maybe a discussion as their greatest ever footballer, but the two of them were on that team as well. And when Wicklow beat Kildare, because that is a big thing, beating Kildare, particularly if you're from West Wicklow, he was on the backroom team with Mick O'Dwyer that day. So, yeah, look, Kevin O'Brien, for me, he is the greatest footballer that's come out of Wicklow. And like I said, despite what the record books say, Wicklow is a GAA county. And Kevin O'Brien, for me, and also for a Western representation as well, he has to be in.
Okay. So Katie on with Kevin O'Brien on, and we're going to move on to our next. We should, like, it's unfortunate in a conversation like this that we don't get 30 minutes to talk about how amazing Katie is and what she means to Wicklow, and haven't even mentioned her Republic of Ireland caps, and there's a lot of other stuff. We're almost just assuming that it's a universal decision and there's no great debate about it. But the point about it being a football county, Paul, and the provenance and tradition of Wicklow. Like, we've had great and passionate pleas from some other counties about their sporting credentials. And I hope this doesn't come across like a disrespectful comment, but when Wicklow came up, I scratched my head for a while and wondered what sort of a county it actually was.
Yeah, yeah, that's fair enough. Because of the dearth of all Ireland's. And yeah, I mean, it's a county that's produced two Olympic gold medalists, and there aren't many counties can say that. I don't know. I mean, given Wicklow's lack of success at inter-county level in, you know, football and hurling, a lot of these kind of heroes seem like kind of local heroes to me. You know, footballers, there are always great footballers playing for bad teams or for counties who you know, can't put out a great 15. I would sort of probably take issue with that. I haven't got the chisel out yet, but Tom knows that's where the conversation is.
That's a good indicator, right? So we've Katie on, we've Kevin O'Brien on. Tom, where are you taking us next?
Next is rugby, and the greatest rugby captain of the modern era, I'd say, in Leo Cullen. Absolutely phenomenal achievements. Three-time Heineken Cup winner, led his team to those three Heineken Cups, then, you know, moved into the coaching hot seat, led his team to another Heineken Cup. Absolutely phenomenal performer, incredible captain, probably underrated, just because he's of a similar vintage to Paul O'Connell and Dunnock O'Callaghan, who kind of would have kept him out of the Ireland team for much of his career. Went to Leicester, followed one of the greatest second row leaders in the history of the game, Martin Johnson, stepped into the captain's role there. And you look back through Leo Cullen's entire career, and he has been a captain at every single stage of brilliant teams throughout his entire rugby career. He went to Blackrock College and, you know, I'm sure, like, I think on a timeline, Paul, is probably around the start of the Ross O'Carroll Kelly era. But and surely the dream team in Blackrock were part of the inspiration. But Leo Cullen was the captain of that team.
I can't believe he could lead with his two Leicester School senior coaches.
Yeah.
Well, three Heineken Cups as a player, your Premiership, your Heineken Cup as a coach. He won two Leinster School Senior Cup. I mean, there's a lot of great players don't have even one of those, you know?
Yeah, exactly. And even, like, on from that, that team then went on to an Ireland schools team, and they toured, and they were phenomenally successful. I think they won the first Ireland tours to successfully tour Australia. They toured Argentina successfully as well. So, look, for me, Leo Cullen is on there. Just his the depth of his achievements over an incredibly long career. And again, somewhat underrated. And, you know, you look at him and you imagine he is not the greatest leader of men. You don't know. But obviously what happens, but he's just clearly the most inspirational character and an incredible leader. And he's just shown that. Like obviously he doesn't come across that well in his media interviews. But, like, you just look at his career from literally the day he started playing rugby at any sort of decent level at all, arrived to this day, and it's been nothing but success.
I do remember being at a press conference years ago when he was still playing, and it was around the time that Brian O'Driscoll had been yet again snubbed for the IRB Player of the Year, and Leo Cullen, obviously the journalists were asking all the questions about why, you know, the outrage about this at Leinster, and, you know, his thoughts on it, and he giving the response that he was just gutted that he himself hadn't won the Player of the Year, which probably was a good reflection of the man. But on rugby, like, we're ignoring two lions in the shape of Shane Byrne and Nick Popplewell, and Reggie Corrigan as well, also in the mix. Like, I mean, I know we're talking about Leinster Senior Cups, but, you know, significant. And, like, even Nick Popplewell, there's a strong argument for him being maybe the next best of the rest there. Like, that Lions Tour 93 really cemented his credentials as a top-class front rower.
I think the argument then is about the best of the rest. I think Leo Cullen is head and shoulders above the rest of them. Another thing that I could add to what Tom said that Leo Cullen did was he was part of this, I suppose, the changing culture in Leinster. They were underachievers for so long. There was the whole ladyboys thing, and, you know, they were a team who, you know, could do it on sunny days, but didn't have it you know, when things got tough, you know, and he was part of that turnaround. I think him coming back from Leicester was part of the change in the culture in the Leinster dressing room, which was, you know, hugely important. But I think the fact that he wasn't part of the Ireland success story during those years is probably the only mark against him. If you wanted to make a case to not include him, you might say, you know, I think he only won 32 caps in 10 years or something, which is, you'd struggle to think of somebody in any sport, an Irishman in any sport, who's that accomplished, who has such an undistinguished international career. Maybe Steve Highway, but that's the only other player in another sport I can think of. But for me, Leo Cullen, you know, is nailed on or chiselled in.
Does the coach aspect of it tip it over the edge, or are you just saying straight as a player, he's in
even
already?
As a player, I mean, even if he never coached, I think as a player, like the only man to captain three Heineken Cup winning teams. And obviously the school's medals as well, you know, which are more important, obviously. I think even if he hadn't coached, and who knows what he's going to go on to achieve as a coach as well. I mean, he's a phenomenon. So I don't disagree at all with you on that one, Tom.
The thing about Leo Cullen is he clearly has humility. Like his first, you know, and he is a willingness to change and a willingness. Like you look at it, when it didn't work out for him immediately at Leinster, and he's happy enough to go and bring someone like Stuart Lancaster in with him as a coach. And you just think, like, as a young coach, to have that, you know, level of humility to just accept, well, we need other people on board here to help to ensure that this everything is for the best. And his selflessness. Is clearly something that helped him over the course of his career, because he was such a leader, and not in the like, oh, pick up the ball and run 50 yards kind of leader, but obviously more in a leader in the proper sense of the word, like less Michael Jordan, much more, you know, much more of an organizer on the pitch.
There's a pot now of about 10 people as we look to our last nomination from your end, Tom, who've all got their hand up going, oh, please be me. You want to give us a bit of a sense of who you're thinking about and who you're going with?
Yeah, you know, everyone's just expecting me to go for a really obvious one here, but there's one reason why I'm not, like, one reason I'm not going for it. I think it's a massive question mark over the providence of putting Ronnie Delaney in, to be perfectly honest. I'm not doubting he's not from Wicklow, but, like, he kind of moved out when he was about 5 years of age, and, like, you know, yes, he is from Wicklow, but his you know, his Arklandness has the whack of a sort of town council meeting in about 1957, and someone goes, puts their hands up and says, do you know he's actually from Arklow? What? Where'd you hear that? I heard him in his interview in the Late Late Show. Oh, we better name a house and estate after him, so, and then, you know.
Which is what happened.
Yeah, you know, and any time I see, I read a little bit, he's where he talks about, you know, his heritage, and again, that reminds me of... he's obviously trying to be very nice about Wicklow, and you know he says nice things, and it's just, but it's like he's clearly not from Wicklow. You know what I mean? He moved to Sandymount when he was about 4 years of age. He did all his running in Sandymount. He became a brilliant athlete in the US, and then I think Wicklow happily like just grabbed his providence after the fact. But I can see Paul Shaggy's head here, so he's obviously going to put him in.
I think you could make the same case for Leo Cullen. I mean, Leo Cullen left Wicklow to board in Blackrock College when he was 11 years of age. So when I hear Leo Cullen speak, I don't hear a Wicklow accent. So you could make exactly the same case there.
And his family remained in Wicklow, and he would always have gone. And he only actually moved out of Wicklow himself, as in having a house, and he became... I mean, thanks to the Irish Times property supplement for this, but he only sold his house when he actually became, his Wicklow house, when he actually became Leinster coach to live in Dublin 4. So he definitely had more of a link in roots to the county, I would suggest. And that is the only reason I'm not putting the other Olympic gold medalist on the list.
That's shocking, Tom. Absolutely shocking.
What?
You're using the fact that he said nice things about Wicklow against him is incredible.
It just has the whack of small town politics about it, that's all. Look, I'm sure
this better
I'm
be
sure
good. Keep
what?
This better be good. Wherever you're going with this, it better be good.
I'm going with my own inherent biases here. So you know this is going to horse racing. Because Cheltenham Gold Cups are incredibly difficult to win, and they're difficult to win even if you're Willie Mullins and you have the greatest training operation known to man. And, you know, champion trainers are Aidan O'Brien and Willie Mullins and Noel Mead and enormous powerhouses of the game. Not Francis Flood from Grangecon in County Wicklow, who was absolutely an incredible trainer. In 1973, he trained Glen Carrig-Lady to win the Gold Cup. She was the first mare to win a Gold Cup since the war. The only other one to do it since is Dawn Run. You have to consider at the time, in the 70s, Ireland's atrocious record at Cheltenham. He's also a product of Paddy Slater, who is, again, an absolute innovator, also from Grangecon, kind of County Wicklow. So I'm kind of putting these in as almost a two-for-one, because many of the rules in racing today and regulations come from Paddy Slater exploiting loopholes and landing gambles back in the day, including winning nine Galway plates. But Francis Flood, for me, on the back of he's won two Irish Grand Nationals, he's won a Cheltenham Gold Cup, he had Bob's Line as well as one of the great two-mile chasers from the 1980s. He was a brilliant jockey as well back in his day, also riding for Paddy Slater. But as a horseman, as a man, brilliant, brilliant achievements. Champion trainer in 1970 as well. Like I said, normally you look at champion trainers and they're the biggest names in the sport, but he was training out of a small yard, relatively small yard, in Grangecon. And like I said, Glen Carrig-Lady win that Gold Cup in 1973. We take, you know, 19 Cheltenham winners or 17 Cheltenham winners for granted these days. But in the 70s and 80s, they were incredibly hard come by. And to have a mare go and win a Gold Cup is a phenomenal achievement. So I'm putting Francis Flood for his riding and training achievements on Mount Rushmore.
Okay, well, thanks, Simon. That's Paul Howard sharpens his pencil. A reminder, Katie Taylor, Kevin O'Brien, Leo Cullen, and Francis Flood. There are a lot of names on this sheet in front of me who I would think would feel particularly hard done by. And Paul, you might try and make the case for some of them and tell us which way you're thinking.
Well, I mean, some of them, like, you know, Fionnuala McCormack from Kilcool, you know, two-time gold medalist in European Cross Country Championships. First woman to successfully defend her title, double Olympian in the steeplechase. I mean, Gary O'Toole, it just feels wrong that we're having this conversation about great Wicklow sports people and Gary O'Toole's name hasn't come up yet. And he's a real hero of mine, you know, and coming from a country that didn't have a 50-metre pool, you know, and now we've got about 40 of them. But back in the 80s, when he was kind of making his name as a world-ranked swimmer, we didn't have a 50-metre pool, so we had to go away to train or train here in a 25-metre pool. He won a silver medal in the 200-metre breaststroke at the European Championships in Bonn in 1989. And it was an extraordinary achievement, you know, in the context of the times, given that doping was so prevalent in swimming. And Gary was a clean swimmer, you know, as far as I can say, Gary always swam clean. He did all of this stuff while studying to be a doctor. And of course, the other thing he did to distinguish himself was to expose George Gibney as a paedophile, which involved knocking on the doors of dozens of swimmers he knew and just saying, you know, tell me your story. And he is an extraordinary sportsman, but also an extraordinary person as well. And it feels, you know, I have to say, it doesn't sit well with me leaving him off Wicklow's Mount Rushmore.
Listen, you two have the power to go ahead and make whatever calls you want.
But it's not sport and merit.
If Paul, you can make a strong enough case to force Tom's hand before you even get to make your final selection.
Yeah, it's all open. There are others as well. I mean, there are others as well. I mean, you get the Joshua Pym story is absolutely great. Wimbledon in the 1890s, and like, it's not that I didn't consider it, like Eamon Darcy, that putt in the Ryder Cup, and then you have to, you know, think Harry Bradshaw, a 36-hole playoff in the 1949 Open.
Harry Bradshaw, I think, is just a great story rather than, you know, he never really kind of won anything on the international stage, you know, the Open Championship in 1949 where he lost in the playoff, like that was his sort of big kind of international moment, and it was a loss. And I think, you know, it sounds unfair, but that's, I think that's what he's most remembered for.
Yeah.
Ed Joyce, for instance. I mean, he's definitely on the Bray Mount Rushmore. You could make a very good case for Ed Joyce being on the Wicklow Mount Rushmore as well, in that, you know, he scored a century for England against, you know, arguably the best side ever in 2007. You know, single-handedly carried Ireland to its first Cricket World Cup and sort of really kick-started the whole cricket revival in Ireland. Scored a double century for Ireland against the United Arab Emirates. And, you know, kind of was part of that Ireland's first ever test match team against Pakistan. I mean, he was cricket in Ireland for a long time. And like I said, I think he would definitely make the Bray Mount Rushmore, but just, I think for me, just misses the Wicklow one.
Joshua Pym is a name that you brought to our attention that Tom has mentioned there.
I mean, Joshua Pym, I mean, we're talking about constructing a Mount Rushmore here in a county that has two Olympic gold medalists and a three-time Wimbledon champion. And the Wimbledon champion and one of the Olympic medalists aren't on it. I mean, I just think this...
I mean, an 1890s Wimbledon is probably not the same as beating a Novak Djokovic, it's a wonderful achievement.
But sport didn't start when you were born, you know? And I think the problem with your Mount Rushmore is all of these people are kind of... Everybody on that, I think, was within your lifetime. Is that right? They're all people you've seen, they're all people you have experience of. But if you asked somebody who's 80 years of age in Wicklow for the same list, I'm sure, you know, I mean, they wouldn't remember Joshua Pym, but but winning Wimbledon in 1893 and 1894, I mean, the tournament was different then. I mean, it wasn't the Wimbledon we know now. There was an all-comers championship first, and then the winner of the all-comers championship played the reigning champion. And Joshua Pym was runner-up twice in 1891 and 1892, and then won it in 1893 and 1894, two singles titles in a row. He also won the doubles as well. He's also, interestingly, he's related to the Pyms.
People. Pyms.
And that's a drink that I associate with tennis, actually, is that? Not necessarily Wicklow, you know, but he was a very interesting guy. He worked in Loughlinstown Hospital, so he's kind of very much of the. I mean, it's not Wicklow; it's as close to Wicklow as can be, so he's very much of the area. He lived in Cliney for a lot of years, and his doubles partner, I read, is a really interesting piece I found in the Bray People about him. His doubles partner was called F.O. Stoker, and he was a relation to Bram Stoker.
Brother, according to Wikipedia, Paul, to my great research.
Is that right? Yeah.
That's an incredible story.
I just think with something like this, you need an old geezer or two to give it some kind of historical perspective. I just think, you know, being a great footballer in an average team or a poor team is one thing, but he went to England and won Wimbledon. Why are we even debating this? He won Wimbledon twice.
And he played we were discussing with Dara Breen earlier on, he played with typhoid one of the years and still managed to get through a couple of rounds. This story.
Doubles partner.
Frank Typhoid. It deserves a book in itself. It's an incredible story.
He also intriguingly, I found a story in the Fife's Dictionary of Irish Sports, which used to be it was on my desk when I was a sports writer. It was my Bible. That he once played for the British Isles Davis Cup team under the name Mr. X, which is very intriguing, but there's no explanation as to why.
Wow. Maybe that was the typhoid years. he was trying not to do a Typhoid Mary on it. A couple of quick names to mention before we start to wrap and look at exactly who we're putting up here that we have to mention. Leighton Glynn, I don't think we've mentioned yet, the incredible career that he's had at club and county level.
Yeah, I think 20 county titles between hurling and football. Quite incredible.
It's phenomenal. And in football, Darren Randolph. And Paul McShane hasn't got a lot of love, but like, I mean, when you talk about sort of sport that's as pervasive as soccer is and the career that he's etched out, like, there are a couple of names that are worthy of consideration, surely.
Can I add another old geezer to this, because it's very 80s and 90s centric. Alan Kelly Senior played for Bray Wanderers and Drumcondra, and he was born in Sallynoggin, but by Tom's reckoning, because he moved to Wicklow when he was four or something, I think that makes him a Wicklow man.
In is fine, out on.
He played 447 times for Preston in the league, and that's a record. Had an FA Cup runners-up medal in 1964, won 47 caps for Ireland, and fathered two Ireland goalkeepers in Alan Kelly Jr. and Gary Kelly.
I can add in someone from before that as well, like Andy McAvoy, who played for Bray and then moved to Blackburn. I think he was a top scorer in the 50s for Blackburn, and his name is actually carried on the Wicklow Regional Premier Division as well. So Andy McAvoy, to get an old geezer, I think he's from the 50s. So he was one that was flagged to me to make sure to mention.
So we're getting to that point where we're going to have to start pushing for a final one on. I mean, the case for Gary O'Toole is exceptionally strong, and I hope he's given due consideration now. But we're in that position where we've got Katie, Kevin O'Brien, Leo Cullen and Francis Flood. The first question to you, Tom, as to whether anything you've heard over the last 10 minutes has dissuaded you from your initial choice and you want to maybe swap out Francis Flood, for example, for Gary O'Toole.
Well, I mean, my sort of four has been eight for the last 2 days anyway. And I'll happily swap Francis out for, I think, either Gary O'Toole or Fionnuala McCormack. So I'll leave it
so
up to
you. Are you doing that before Paul's selection?
Well, we can see, because I just can't let Kevin O'Brien go. So as attached as I am to anyone else, as a representative of West Wicklow, and having spoken to people from the Wicklow people and from East Coast Radio, and they are just there's a lot of love for KOB, and I can't let him go. So if I'm to drop one, I'll drop Francis.
On the point about Gary O'Toole and Fionnuala, the reason I wouldn't include them is that in swimming and athletics, I think the real measure of greatness is the Olympic Games, and neither of them has won a medal at the Olympic Games. And I think when you've got two Olympic gold medal winners born in Wicklow, I don't see a case for leaving Ronnie Delaney out and putting Gary O'Toole in, for instance, for some kind of birth certificate reasons that he left, or he was born there but he left when he was four or something like that. But I think that is the measure. It's what you do at the Olympic Games. That's what you're remembered by. Gary O'Toole won his medal in the European Championships, which is it was a significant achievement at the time. But it's still a minor championships compared to, you know, the Worlds and the Olympics. And I would say the same with Fionnuala. It was a European cross-country championship. So so neither of them make the Mount Rushmore for me.
Okay, so the last, before we put it finally to you, Tom, regardless of Paul's selection, you're signing off on Katie, Kevin O'Brien, Leo Cullen and Francis Flood. Are you signing off on those as your selections?
I'll go with them in my selections, yeah.
You're happy with that incorrect selection?
In a show us your medals context, I am happy with those, absolutely.
So Paul, what are you doing?
Kevin O'Brien doesn't have any medals. He has
nothing but medals. He is the most bemedaled. He has Railway Cups, he's in All-Ireland, he's a Leinster, he's 20 county championships or something like that. Yeah, he's tons of medals.
And Paul, are you saying then that Ronnie Delaney is your selection to go up regardless of who's coming down?
Well, I think Kevin O'Brien, it's a very parochial selection, and I totally understand Tom's reasons for selecting him. I think a lot of them are sentimental. I don't think he's somebody who you know, who I would think would represent Wicklow on that Mount Rushmore. See, I'm torn now. I mean, Josh,
he's represented Wicklow his whole life. He's and he continues to represent Wicklow. He's an under-20s manager. He's been nothing but a servant of Wicklow.
Yeah, I know, I know. But so somebody's driving south from Dublin and they're heading into Wicklow and they look at this Mount Rushmore. Is he one of the faces who represents the county? For me, he isn't. I'm really torn here because, you know, I'm being asked to choose between a two-time Wimbledon winner and Olympic gold medalist. I hear what Tom's saying about him leaving when he was 6 years of age, but I don't think it's like that. I mean, there is a plaque on the way into, I drive into Arklow most days because I live in Avoca. And as you, just before you go over the bridge into the town, there's a plaque on the wall to say this is the house where Ronnie Delaney was born. I think Ronnie Delaney's gold medal is, quite apart from the geographic argument that, that Tom put, I think Ronnie Delaney's gold medal is perhaps our greatest Olympic gold medal, because it was in 1956. He beat in Melbourne. He beat the local favourite John Landy in the 1500 metre final. The 1500 metres at the time was the blue ribboned event in the Olympics. It still means so much in Melbourne that the running shoes he wore that day are on display in the Melbourne cricket ground in a glass case. He made the cover of Sports Illustrated that year. So he was a huge international athlete, you know, recognized all over the world. So I'm torn between, it just feels weird to leave out Joshua Pym. We haven't had Ireland hasn't had a Wimbledon winner since, but I think with a heavy heart, I'm going to have to make a choice here and I'm going to choose Ronnie Delaney. Okay. To go on. Just because it would look utterly ridiculous without Ronnie Delaney. To have two Olympic gold medal winners in a county, and you're right, there's an estate here called Delaney Park, and not only, this will tell you Ronnie Delaney's commitment to the area, he came to the opening of Delaney
Park. He's been in the Arklow Bay Hotel. He
drove to Arklow to attend the opening ceremony, the cutting of the ribbon for Delaney Park.
No greater recommendation. Right, so yeah. Ronnie's got up. And so you can sleep tonight, Paul. You would have gone for Ronnie, obviously Joshua Pym, obviously Katie Taylor. And who would have been your fourth selection that you had,
oh,
you had
Leo
that?
Bull. No question.
And Leo Cullen. Grand, okay. Yeah. Grand, so we're putting Ronnie up, and are we deciding that, who are we deciding comes off?
Well, it's either going to be Francis Flood or Kevin O'Brien. And I think out of pure malice towards Tom. I think I'm going to take down Kevin O'Brien.
Oh, brilliant.
But there's not much between him and Flood either, like, you know, either of them are going to come down. But I think because Tom's heart is so set on Kevin O'Brien, and he's upset me so much by ignoring a double Wimbledon winner just because he came from the century before the last century. I think I'm going to take down Kevin O'Brien.
Okay, so Ronnie goes up, Kevin O'Brien comes out, and now that that's been done, Tom, as we're about to put the full wax stamp on this thing, what have you any last leanings towards? Putting Gary O'Toole up and taking Francis Flood off, or Joshua Pym for that matter?
No. I nearly swapped Kevin back in for Francis Flood, but no.
Well, that's been signed. Right, we are collectively signing off of this thing. I'm reluctantly or not, Paul, I'm going to add in there, as Katie Taylor, and let's face it, as four heads on it, Katie Taylor is going to occupy 75% of this, because that's all people want to see when they're driving that direction. Katie Taylor is going to be up there. Ronnie Delaney is going to be up there. Leo Cullen is up there, and Francis Flood up there too. Dara O'Brien made the case earlier to put it on Bray Head with their arses all facing to the rest of Wicklow. Where are we putting it?
As Paul said, we're not putting it anywhere because we won't get the planning permission. So
I think if it's going anywhere, it is Bray Head is the perfect spot for it, I think. Or maybe up in the Sally Gap or something like that.
Yeah, just by Turlough Hill there. If you just put it on the side of Turlough Hill on the lake there, we're having to see it.
Yeah. Great idea. It would really enhance the area, wouldn't it?
Yeah.
Contention. The contention notwithstanding, you've been absolutely brilliant to put yourself through the ringer over the last, I'm sure, last couple of days as you picked through this and with your time this morning as well. The Wicklow Mount Rushmore, thanks a million, lads. Wicklow Mount Rushmore is in the can.
Thanks.
OTB AM's Mount Rushmore.
OTB AM.
With Aviva, Ireland's largest insurer, celebrating 10 years of iconic sporting moments at the Aviva Stadium. That was an OTB Podcast Network presentation.